Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach Arskadden coming to you from North Carolina on this glorious and thankful Friday, where freedom has decided to take its place in the world. And really, this is a great point for us to realize of why we need to stay involved here in America, and also giving hope and freedom for the rest of the world as well. And starting off in scripture, I think there's so many scriptures about being thankful, being grateful, but I want to remind ourselves of this scripture in Proverbs that says, and this is the New American Standard in 29:2, that says, "When the righteous increase, the people rejoice, but when the wicked person rules, people groan." And in this instance, a translation that fits is the New Living Translation. It says, "When the godly are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked are in power, they groan." And what has happened is righteousness and freedom has decided to take its place in this issue. But know that the battle is not over. This Biden administration is not giving up, and there are ways they will, and I'll get into that here in a second. But we want to continue to be thankful, standing, praying for freedom, people to make their own medical choices, and focusing on the next issue now that's the most heated and most soon pressing issue on the battle in the Senate around the voting rights issue, removing the filibuster, etc. There has been some new breaking things come out yesterday as to how we need to pray and understand things. A lot of what we talked about yesterday applies. That has kind of played out, so we'll follow up on that story. But first, I want to go to an analysis of this case coming down from the Supreme Court, and really to help understand, we want to hear from a lawyer. I am not a lawyer, so I will side to people who are lawyers. And I want to go to Jay Sekulow's group and his broad. They did an emergency broadcast yesterday, and they broke down what actually happened. So I want to play this first clip of understanding of why they voted down the OSHA case itself. And then we'll get into the healthcare facility mandate as well. They do a good job of analyzing that.
It's interesting. So the court issued what's called a per curiam opinion, which is an order not signed by any justice. It was 6-3. Justice Roberts, of course, is the Chief Justice, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, Justice Gorsuch, Justice Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh. Against were Justice, and this is not surprising based on the oral arguments and based on just judicial philosophy, not shocking here, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Justice Breyer. But what's interesting is it says the Occupational Safety Health Administration has never imposed such a mandate before, nor has Congress. Indeed, although Congress has enacted significant legislation addressing COVID-19 pandemic, it has declined to enact any measure similar to what OSHA has promulgated here. The court then says, "We agree that the applicants are likely to prevail, and we grant the application and the stay of the rule." What's interesting here is they decided this on a narrow ground, which is what we suggested, which was statutory interpretation. The statute, Andy, doesn't authorize this vaccine mandate.
That's exactly correct, Jay. This is a great victory for the Constitution today, and it's a victory for the concept of federalism. It is a victory also for the strict interpretation of the Constitution as saying if the Congress did not mandate and give authority to a federal agency to do a specific thing, unelected bureaucrats in that administration cannot themselves and should not themselves be empowered to do that.
What is interesting, though, is, and there's two different opinions. The case we were involved in, and Jordan will give you the deal. We represent Heritage.
Okay, so that's huge what he just said in understanding the fact that unelected officials do not have a right to make decisions on a broad basis for the entire country as far as how things are going to come down. And Sekulow goes and his group go on to continue. And I want to play a couple more seconds, and then I'm going to go to another clip where they break down further.
Foundation on this at the Supreme Court. And we argued that there was no statutory authority for the mandate. As I said, everybody in this broadcast that's talking to you has been vaccinated, but that's because we decided to do it, not the government coming in. However,
okay, so we're seeing now that the clear lines, and Biden himself even came out after and said this, is that, you know, even though the Supreme Court didn't give us the authority that Congress allocated to us, which is the direct vote down on the Supreme Court from saying this, they go on to clarify. I want to pull this part of the clip up first. In continuing to break down, this is the reason I want to play this, is because this is extremely important for us to understand going forward what this means. And his son Jordan clarifies the ruling here.
By the court, we have won. 2/3 of the American workforce is no longer going to be forced into this bizarre employee-employer relationship well before the fines were going to go into effect. And they were significant fines. Supreme Court picked up on it. Mm-hmm. $13,000 for a standard violation could be over $100,000 for willful violations. And the court also picked up on something that, as I'm going through the brief the second time through, the argument that
this is quite huge,
even though the Biden administration tried to say, we're not forcing the vaccine on anyone. In fact, this mandate by OSHA did not require businesses to allow the mask and test option. It only said you could do that. So it really was a vaccine mandate for all intents and purposes.
And the reason that that's important, the reason it's important to hear what Jordan's saying there is that they didn't have to require businesses, in if they were to implement this mandate, didn't have to require an actual exemption or a mask or test. They could just say you need to get it or not, and they had the authority if this mandate would have gone forward.
The second part is, the Supreme Court is not trying to downplay the dangers of COVID.
No, they did not. What
this is the important part of the ruling right here.
This is like crime or something that you have to encounter as a human being every single day, and that you encounter this risk at home.
Correct.
At school.
Everywhere.
In any kind of public life.
Everywhere.
And when it comes to public health, outside of very limited exceptions at the federal level, that's a state and local matter. And that's who should be responsible. And Joe Biden himself said that's who should be responsible.
Correct.
That's how we started our brief, was quoting the current president of the United States saying it's not going to be solved by the federal government. It's going to be solved by the states. So then don't put these requirements that we're going to burden the employers at a tough time already for employers, and a tough time with keeping employees right now for a lot of these employers.
Okay, so there's this analysis on the OSHA ruling. Now we're seeing, I'm going to pull this up, the Biden administration and Biden himself coming out and asking businesses to want to, let me make sure I get it up now. It disappeared on me. Here we go. Getting to the point where they're asking businesses, urging businesses to institute a vaccine requirement themselves. And what he said, he says he's disappointed, and as a result of the court's decision, it is now up to the states and individual employers to determine whether to make their workplaces as safe as possible for employees, and whether their businesses will be safe for consumers during this pandemic. Which we've already gone through the worst of it, talking about and understanding. If we understand the science behind it, Omicron is on its way down. Hospitalizations, deaths, et cetera, are on the way down. Even though it spreads, people are supposedly getting it. And then there's a debate around whether that's actually true or not, depending on how the tests are the same as they were before. But I digress. And want to point this out, we want to repent for this, is that he said the court has ruled that my administration cannot use the authority granted to it by Congress to acquire this measure. The very fact that they ruled the way they did proves that you do not have this authority that you think you do. If you did, you would be allowed to do such a thing. But this has not stopped me from using my voice as president to advocate for employers to do the right thing to protect Americans' health and economy. I call on business leaders to immediately join those who have already stepped up, including one-third of Fortune 100 companies, and institute vaccine requirements to protect their workers, customers, and communities. Okay. So the Biden administration themselves on other issues, not just asking businesses, they're going to try this in another way. And now you're seeing the Biden administration is calling on social media companies and news organizations to deal with the misinformation and disinformation on their platforms, overstepping the bounds that the government has of having, using these platforms for the public square and having debate to occur. When debate occurs, truth comes out and the truth can be seen. And you're also seeing those in Congress, Bernie Sanders specifically, asking for the federal government to pay for production and mass distribution of N95 and KN95 masks, three to every house, every individual or household. I can't remember exactly what it was. The Mask for All Act. $5 billion towards this whole project, saying that we need to be able to do this, et cetera. This is a disaster if we're not able to. Look, at the end of the day, it's not just because it's so widespread, but it's still a health choice from every American that they have to decide on what they want to do. And so you're seeing the Supreme Court say that is just the case. Now, we go towards away from the OSHA mandate, and we go into the HHS ruling, and they go into Sekulow and then break it down. We're going to find more about this, and this was not a lot of focus around a lot of individuals coming into this because everyone was focused on the private employers. But this breakdown on the HHS bill is, I think, an understanding of what it means when you take federal funding from the government and what they can and are allowed to do to your businesses, hospital, whatever it is. So here's this breakdown.
However, there is a separate case, and we will get into that tomorrow on the broadcast, involving healthcare workers, because I know we get a lot of calls about that. There, the court said that the mandate can go into effect as it relates to Medicare and Medicaid hospitals that are receiving Medicare and Medicaid, which is just about every hospital. It wasn't an OSHA rule, though. It was through the Department of Health and Human Services and federal funding that was going on. But the employer mandate for private businesses, which is what we've been talking about for weeks on the broadcast.
So to understand that is the reason it was allowed to go through on medical facilities who took Medicaid and Medicare funding is because it was an HHS ruling. And I want to play this last clip because Jordan Sekulow does a great job of breaking down what we need to understand about this. And then there is extra analysis on what this means going forward for businesses and institutions who decide themselves to take funding from the federal government.
United States, don't let them flip around this healthcare.
And this is a good point. Don't let those who understand or who are going to try to push that, oh, we won, we're able to get this mandate pushed forward. And understand this, the administration is going to now, these PPP loans in the future, if there's ever a pandemic, they're going to offer them, but it's going to be that funding is going to be the worm on the hook for a fish. And the businesses that bite it are going to get sunk and pulled down.
I think everybody who asked us, we all thought, a likely win for them.
Yeah, no,
because when the government gives you significant amounts of money, they can then tell you what to do.
Well, and also the nexus between the agency they utilized and the money that was given out. So the second case Jordan's talking about is if you're a healthcare worker, the federal government, through the Health and Human Services Administration, mandated a vaccine as part of your employment requirement subject to a religious liberty exemption. And a lot of hospitals are having trouble with that, frankly, because they're losing some people, a lot of people. But the court there.
And they're also allowing vaccinated COVID positive nurses, doctors to be able to work with patients, while yet the unvaccinated are sitting in a home fired. And yet they're having problems finding nurses.
5-4 said, no, that one, there is a nexus. It's HHS and it's different. And Van, I think that goes back to, we talk about this a lot on air, and that's the difference between what agency you pick on how you regulate.
Yeah, not every agency has the same authority. It goes to another argument this we talk right about here. All the time, Jay, which is when we talk about if we want to give money and authority to an agency, that comes with strings attached. So look, a healthcare entity that is taking money for Medicaid or Medicare is clearly bound by those strings. It's a different analysis. And I think on a bunch of other issues, we'd be wise to take it into account.
The original case.
And what we're seeing now is that the reason the HHS ruling was able to come down is because Kavanaugh and Roberts ruled on the side with the three liberal judges, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Breyer, in saying that, yes, the HHS does have the authority because they gave loans and you take government, basically because the government is your boss because you take Medicaid and Medicare funding, then we are allowed to authorize vaccine requirements from those who take that money. And somebody asks here in the comment sections, what is a PPP loan? It was the government handout during 2020 for businesses and entities who needed funding to help payroll, is payroll protection plan. If you could show that you were going to lose money because of the government shutdowns, then the federal government was going to give PPP loans. They were supposed to be able to be paid back within 2 to 5 years, but ultimately 100% of them were forgiven and not required to be paid back. Now we'll see if they're going to use that to try to force those institutions, private businesses, churches, every institution out there who took it, which is public information. You can go see who took it. We'll see if they do that. But going forward on this issue, there's three battleground topics, or really four, that I think could come up, and I could be wrong, could be right. Who knows? But when thinking about this, is now businesses have to decide whether to mandate or not a vaccine requirement or mask requirement and or not. Then, and states as well, then it could also be a court battle there at the state level, the Supreme Court level, whether businesses and or states have the authority to do such a thing. Rick Joyner, who studies the Constitution, says he does not believe, because no state constitution says they have the authority to be able to mandate such a decision upon individuals for their health. So the opinion is from these cases and these arguments that Sekulow and his group and pretty much everyone was arguing that, well, this belongs to the states. Gorsuch, even in his ruling, in his writing, said that this belongs to the states and local authorities. Again, that's up for debate. We'll see, plays out, whether businesses and states actually go forward with that. Some states will. DeSantis himself in Florida said, we do not have the authority to do that, and we're not going to do that. We know the Biden administration, I already talked about that. Biden administration is not going to give up, and the debate of court packing is going to come up again, because they're upset that people looked at the law, looked at the Constitution and what was there. So you're going to see this push from progressives again to push for court packing, basically drowning out and making the nine, not just the six who ruled to push down this mandate, but the nine total voices diluted. There could be a push for that. So something to pay attention to in the days ahead. And then last term, from both sides, they're going to make the upcoming midterm elections a very heated debate for this very topic. Of why it is important to win elections, because as the famous words of Obama, elections have consequences. And so we're going to see in the days ahead that the battle for this moves forward on these issues. So while, yes, this is a victory in this moment, it is not something to give up on, because the battle is not over. All right. I want to move on to the last thing, which is this battle around the voting rights issue, where we talked about yesterday how the House basically rewrote a NASA law bill into the two Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act bill, basically rewrote that NASA bill and said here, and then put it as a message to the Senate. The Senate says they're going to take up the vote soon, and it has come out that they're going to take the vote up on Tuesday, which is past the deadline, self-imposed deadline of Monday, because of snow and COVID positive tests, because they don't have a quorum to actually go forward with the vote, or more so with the debate. And great analysis coming from CNN on this entire issue, which is a surprise, maybe not a surprise, of the realities of whether this is actually going to go forward or not.
It's not going very well for the White House. In fact, they are bound to fail. There's virtually no path for this happening.
Because the reason that is it's going to fail is because you can have a debate, but you can't go forward with a vote because you still have to have two-thirds majority to be able to get it to go forward. And the best news that came out of everything yesterday on this issue was from Kyrsten Sinema herself, who on the Senate floor said this.
It is through elections that Americans make their voices heard, select their representatives, and guide the future of our countries and our community. These bills help treat the symptoms of the disease, but they do not fully address the disease itself. And while I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country. The debate over the Senate 60-vote threshold shines a light on our broader challenges. There's no need for me to restate my longstanding support for the 60-vote threshold to pass.
And that's the important thing, is this is something she has said from the very beginning about the fact that she's not going to vote for the removal of the filibuster. And such we had audio for, but we don't, is something Joe Manchin asked President Biden privately. And this is the question. I'm going to pull it up. It's from Politico. He asked him, Joe Manchin asked Biden privately behind closed doors, did the late Robert Beard ever break Senate rules to change him? And the response is scary from the president. He said, we are in different times now. Basically, well, now because it's politically expedient for us to change the rules, we're going to do it because I say so. And Joe Manchin has now come out and said, we are not going forward with this. I do not stand for this. He pretty much said the same thing Kyrsten Sinema said, is, look, I'm going to continue to stand on where I stood before, which is I am not going to get rid of the filibuster, because if we're going to pass this, we need to be able to pass this on a bipartisan issue, not a partisan issue. And they're calling out the disease of division. That is exactly right. And in some of these bills, let's remind ourselves, what are in these bills, why it's important to continue to pray against this, pray that Joe Manchin and other Democrats and Republicans in the House and in the Senate stand up to this, is because when given the opportunity to actually do the right thing, even in these bills, Democrats blocked the plan where it would allow an amendment to be added on that would secure the voting by mail process and allow the state's voter rolls to be cured of foreign nationals who were on the voter rolls. And in part of these bills, it would remove the requiring an ID that most states have for you to vote. This is what the federal government wants to do through these bills. And in some states, it's a battle. It's an issue. It's an issue here in North Carolina, I'm finding. is laws are being put in place and they're trying to overturn them. In some states, they're going back and trying to remove them. So our prayer is on this issue is to continue to intercede for both sides, leaders, to stand against the removal of filibuster and the takeover of this voting rights bill. It is most likely doomed to die. But again, this Biden administration is not going to give up. There's reports out there from both sides of the aisle about how in the last 24 hours and last week, whatever, the Biden administration is failing. Everything they're trying to do is falling apart. Okay, that's great. But understand this, they're not going to give up. Their window is shrinking if and only if freedom-minded officials are elected to office in the midterms. The midterms will play a crucial role. This is why we're here. And as we close out for this week, let's remind ourselves of, even though it may seem dark, of even though it may seem like there's no hope lost, and you know, it's a sad day for medical workers who they advocated for this stuff, and now they're going to be forced to take these vaccines, given the fact that there's no science to show the actual efficacy of the vaccines plus the boosters. And then you add on the boosters and the boosters and the boosters on top of that that are to come. There's no science to show that that is actually the proper health decision. Again, that is my opinion. But let's remind ourselves of why we're here, to pray for the office of the president so that the wisdom of the Holy Spirit can come in and help guide them. And in this season where we know there's a rat in the White House that is leading, it's not just Fauci. It's other people behind the scenes that you will never know, people within unelected officials' offices, part of the swamp. We're seeing the realities. The more and more we go of governments trying to do things, of how deep the swamp is, how entrenched it is, and why the founding fathers understood that we, the people, have the ultimate authority in the natural, and that understanding that God has the ultimate authority in the spiritual. So with that, I close. Bless each and every one of you. Hope you guys have a great weekend. If you're dealing with a cold, pneumonia, whatever's going on with this cold weather, that you're able to get healed, get some rest this weekend, and spend some time with the Lord as well as with family and friends. And I will be back on Monday to continue to give updates, even though it'll be a holiday. I want to play some things in remembrance to Martin Luther King Jr. and what he stood for, and why it's important to remind ourselves of the price he paid, and understanding that the battle still rages on, about why we continue to stand and pray for the office of the president. So blessings. Thank you. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and I will see you later. Have a good one.